Well, hey, everybody, it's me, Dr. Kevin Stevenson. Thanks for joining me on today's episode of I Don't Care with, of course, me, Dr. Kevin Stevenson. Really appreciate it, as always, you joining me. In today's episode, it's always fun when I get to talk to a fellow Baylor Bear. So join me in welcoming my good friend, Mark Embry. Hey, Mark, welcome to I Don't Care.
Hey, Kevin, good morning. I appreciate it. Glad to be here. And hello, everybody.
You know, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk a little bit about Baylor athletics. You know, had a rough season. We're in the midst of baseball season. Baseball's been a little bit up and down. Mark, have you been able to make it down here to any games?
No. If we're talking about Baylor sports, we just started and we just ended.
We're
done for this season.
You know,
I support them through thick and thin, so I'm excited for next season.
Yeah, me too. I think football is going to be fun. Basketball, both men's and women's were a little bit underwhelming this year. But, you know, that's the thing about being a lifelong Baylor fan. We're always hopeful for next season.
That's right. Hey, actually, this weekend is the five-year anniversary of our national championship in basketball. Yeah. If you remember.
Time flies.
Take us back.
Right? No kidding. I'm sure Coach Scott Drew will be able to do that. I remember vividly that evening I was at the Baylor Club at McLean Stadium watching it on the Jumbotron. And it was just spectacular. There were probably 5,000 or 6,000 students down on the football field watching it as well. When we won that national championship, the Baylor Club broke out glasses of champagne and a bunch of teetotaling Baptists were toasting a national championship with champagne. So it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was great. I somehow absconded a ticket last minute, so I flew up there. I flew to Chicago Sunday night.
Okay.
Drove halfway, slept in my car. Yeah, we were building a business then, right? I didn't have any money, so
right.
So I got up Monday morning, drove into Indianapolis, and went to the game, and just had a blast, and it was one of the best weekends. So great memories.
That's very cool. You know, Indy is a very underrated sports town. A buddy of mine and I went to the Baylor Cincinnati football game last fall, and we were fortunate enough to catch the same weekend that Baylor and Indiana were playing in a men's basketball exhibition there in downtown Indy. And I think it's Bainbridge Fieldhouse is just absolutely gorgeous. And of course, anytime you go to Indianapolis, you cannot pass up St. Elmo's for steak. It's probably the best steak I've ever had in my life.
Okay.
So next time you go to St. Elmo's. It's white glove service. It's amazing.
I'm going to be there a month from today for a Morgan Wallen concert. So I'm going to go to St. Elmo's.
And I'll tell you right now, go ahead and get your reservations right now. It's that
really,
it's that, okay. Hard, but it's well worth it. So anyway, enough about Baylor sports and travel log. Mark, you know, we've known each other for good grief forever, it seems like. And you co-founded a business many, many years ago called MedSys. Talk to my audience about, you know, the origins of MedSys, you know, why you decided to go into healthcare, data, all of that. And then let's talk about the transition away from MedSys, because I know y'all recently sold that, and there are a lot of entrepreneurs that listen to my podcast that want to hear about, you know, what's next whenever you step away from your baby. So where's your?
Yeah. So I'll do a quick recap. So my business partner of 30 years, Alan Kravitz is his name, and he and I founded MedSys Group together. And it was back, and as the story goes, back in 95, Alan was kind of, he was transitioning out of a job and was kind of like, I want to start my own thing. I'm an entrepreneur. What should I do? And he claims that he kind of picked up the Dallas Business Journal, I think at the time, and looked and had an article on the top 10 industries over the next 20 years or something. I think healthcare was number one and technology was number two. And so I was like, all right, this isn't that hard. I'm going to get into healthcare technology in some way, some manner. So pretty quickly, he started up a, you know, at the time, we just really started up a recruiting and staff aug firm specifically to that niche space in healthcare around kind of the EMR technology that was emerging at that time. You know, there were, these were back in the days of Siemens and, oh, I can't even remember some of the, well, NextGen and, you know, McKesson and all those guys. And certainly Epic and Cerner were on their way up and, making good strides. But, so we really, got into it from that standpoint and started to learn the industry and make our contacts and kind of get some work going. And I'd say the real pivot point came in 2007 when we decided to go full in on nothing but healthcare technology and from a consulting firm standpoint. So we felt like we saw a need in the market for a lot of project work, right? So these hospitals, the hospitals kind of already stretched to their max for the staff's time and attention, everything else. When a project came along, certainly of the magnitude of an EMR implementation, you know, to have those individuals try to take that on as well as their day-to-day jobs really seemed impossible, a little unfair, right, to them. And so we thought there was this need for really good and focused and skilled consultants that would do that work and be project-based. And so what we wanted to do was build a company that could be kind of their full-time employment home, even though they may be working on two to three different projects or subsequent projects over the years. So we invested pretty heavily in our benefits and, you know, put together we scrapped together a 401k program. Somebody actually gave it to. And so, but, you know, all the things that we had kind of learned that traveling consultants need, you know, we created an online portal for them to be able to access all that information and submit their time each week. And we try to make it as simple and easy as possible for them so that when they'd been on the road for, you know, usually it was Sunday night or Monday morning, and then they return home Thursday, kind of pre-2020. And so, you know, we kind of sensed, hey, when you get home, you really need to spend Friday, Saturday, Sunday focused on your family and your personal life, right? And so we don't want to have, you know, another 3 hours of expenses and time and all this kind of stuff. So we really tried to be mindful of making that as easy as possible. And so over those years, we created a pretty good base of consultants that were very focused on the EMR space again. And so 2008, I think it was, when they passed the legislation around funding hospitals, healthcare systems for that work, it really exploded, right? And so we jumped on board even more in terms of our internal investment around our programs, supporting our consultants. And because at that point, it was, you could kind of see consultants would be, the good consultants that had done the work before were going to be at a premium. And so, you know, keep them engaged with your client base and how do you provide a stable work environment for them. And so we did that and 16, 17 years later from that point, here we are, right? And the industry has certainly evolved and changed and there's a lot of new cool stuff that's going on now. So it's kind of cool to look back.
What you were saying is incredible because, yeah, I've got a lot of friends that are consultants and it can be very, very rewarding, but it's a hard gig. And you're talking about, you know, as you said, spending so much time on paperwork and that really takes away from, you know, the core business of them working with a client, but it does also take away from the family life. And so, I mean, I think that's really cool that you were able to focus on your people because, you know, again, so many of my consultant friends, they didn't have that luxury, that they don't have that luxury. So when you're talking about the EMR, what aspects of the EMR did your folks deal with? Because there, I mean, anybody that has spent any time in an Epic or a Cerner or whatever platform, yeah, you know, it's multifaceted. Now, did your consultants focus primarily on Epic or Cerner, or were pretty agnostic as far as that goes.
Yep. That's the word I was looking for. We really set out to be agnostic, because health systems, they all needed support, and they needed good consulting. And so, their choice of which systems to put in, was certainly their choice. And we tried to support both. I will say we did forge a really good relationship and a partnership with Cerner over those years. And I spent a good part of my life during those years up in Kansas City, and great culture of a company, great people, really focused on the clients and what they wanted and needed, right? And so really appreciated that time. But our teams, the ideal situation was if we got engaged with the health system that was kind of in their planning phase, because we could help with some of the advisory assistance to say, hey, we've taken other clients through this 10, 20 times. Here's some of the pitfalls that they found. Here's some of the benefits. A lot of times we acted as kind of a translator between the EMR vendor and the hospital, because their language and their verbiage and some of the things that they referred to, they needed to really understand, what am I getting? What am I, what's all part of the system. So really that was the ideal. And so our people would serve as kind of that, as project oversight for the project. I think we made a really smart move in mid-teens, probably 15 or 16, where we brought on some really senior clinical people who had been like a CNO in the past, or actually a practicing doctor who kind of moved over into the tech space. And so they had kind of seen it all from both sides, from being on the client side and in the hospital environment, and then also on the implementation side. We did some of that. And then if the client requested it, we would put a project management team or PMO in place to kind of manage all the day-to-day work. And then a big bulk of our people were the ones actually doing the analyst level work, the build, the design, the rollout, the training, the optimization on the back end. And then, of course, the activation support and all the go live stuff, which those were some of the most interesting and chaotic and also fun times, were those go lives. Right at the end, everyone absolutely exhausted and worn out. And then there's a week or two of just full on support almost around the clock, right, for individuals, trying to get it live and just make sure everybody's adapting to it and it's a success, right? And so those are really the areas of those projects that we participated in.
Okay. I mean as a hospital administrator and dealing with my clinical teams, there was nothing more frustrating for them than, the issues that they would have with the EMR. And I will say, in my last hospital, we called it Franken Epic, because we were one of the early adopters of Epic years ago, long before I got there, but really didn't evolve that early on Epic into the needs over the next, 10, 15 years. And so we were dealing with a very cobbled system where, the hospital was on Epic, our physician group was on Athena, and never the twain shall meet. And honestly, it was very frustrating to patients too, because they, when they would go see a physician, primary care or a specialist, they have to input their information. Then when they come to the hospital, they have to re-input their information because they didn't talk together. And so, But we started looking at, okay, hey, what level of resources are we talking about to upgrade to the level of EMR that we truly needed? It's astounding. And I think most people don't understand how much that is. I recall the number 3-4 years ago was $25 to $30 million. And so, talk a little bit about that. Talk about, how your consultants would help walk hospitals through that journey, because, you're exactly right. I mean, I love what you said about you guys being the interpreters between the EMR systems and the hospitals, because nobody really understood each other's language at times.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that we preached a lot and kind of had our team buy into was that one of the biggest and sometimes overlooked things around a full implementation is the adoption aspect, right? Because if you have had a system for many years and you're frustrated by the way it worked and the output stuff, and you bring in a new system, but you do all the same things, the same workflows, the same ways of doing things, you're going to have the same problems, right? Like, you've got to fix behavior. You've got to fix, you know, the way you go about it to really maximize those outcomes. And so really trying to preach that user adoption and helping them buy into it and put the right workflows in place. You know, that's where the actual transformation took place in my opinion. And so it was really cool to see some of the clients that did that and then go back and visit them maybe a year later and they're like, hey, I know we resisted your advice big time on different, let me tell you some of the success stories and things like that. So that was really a really cool part of it.
Yeah. Now I'm sure your consultants go back in on a fairly regular basis to some of your larger clients and really kind of help them tweak their systems, because, you know, as care delivery evolved, you know, from that acute care centric model to now going to outpatient, you know, the EMRs oftentimes didn't talk along the venues of care. So talk a little bit about your follow-up calls, if you will.
In this space, it seems like there's always the next thing, right? There's the next thing that they have to do or should do, or, you know, as soon as they get through one phase, there's an upgrade that's needed, or there's, you know, or they've done an M&A acquisition, there's a new facility, and how do we get this integrated in? And so, you know, we were very mindful of trying to stay engaged with those clients from the standpoint of, hey, you know, as new initiatives come on your project plan or your roadmap, we would really appreciate just being part of that discussion and, you know, that planning, and if we can include our advisors to kind of, you know, again, give their perspective of where they've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly prior to that. We thought there was a lot of value in that, because if, you know, like anything in our lives, when you're jumping into something that's totally new, trying to help them plan ahead was probably one of the biggest assets that I think we brought to the table, was just looking ahead and say, okay, now what will that affect though down the chain of things and kind of your 5-year plan, right? You know, how's it going to fit into that? And so always try to do our best in that type of follow-up.
Yeah, very good. So let's kind of transition into your transition, if you will. Yeah. You know, you mentioned your relationship with Cerner, and then, you know, they were purchased by Oracle and all of that. You know, was that a major part of your decision to go a different direction with the company?
No, it wasn't, because I think that acquisition by Oracle was about 4 years ago. And so, I mean, certainly when that came about, there was a lot of uneasiness and like, what's going to happen? What are things going to look like? And I know it was an uphill challenge for both companies, kind of integrating and trying to get everything squared away and kind of refocused on things. And, you know, this is all happening shortly after the pandemic. So everything's new at this point. There's all this remote work going on. They had their large government initiative and VA and DOD projects going on. And so it was a bit of a chaotic time, but, you know, it also, I think, created some opportunity to really step up as a partner and say, hey guys, we've, you know, regardless of anything else, we've been working with this technology and our consultants for many years. And so, we are here and ready to offer any of those, that support and services, as you kind of get all the structure in place and things like that, because, you know, at the end of the day, you know, Oracle provided a bigger footprint for them and, you know, more work to be done and more areas to do it in. And so having good people that they knew they could rely on, and, you know, that they knew they could rely on Medsys as a good partner, I think was important. Obviously had to meet a lot of new people from the Oracle world and kind of say, hey, here's what we've been doing for so many years. And they're like, and, you know, show me, you know, what you can do now. And so it's kind of almost a rebirth there of going through that. But no, I, you know, it was, I think like most things in life, timing happened. We had, I'd say probably over the last 5 years, we had, Alan, myself had just a few discussions about, hey, what would it look like if we ever either took on a larger partner or did a transaction, you know, how would that affect our personal lives? How would it affect our employees who have been there? I mean, the bulk of our employees had probably been with us, had a tenure of about an average of about 15, 16 years. So, you know, there was a lot of consideration of how does this affect everybody if something comes up. And then we went back to work, you know, and kept doing our thing and really had some busy years here in, you know, I guess 23 and 24. And so the opportunity came up and we were introduced to an organization and very similar cultures and very similar vision of things for that space. And so, you know, the more we talked and met with them and really considered all the aspects of it and kind of our point in life right now, you know, both of us, I mean, I'm only 32, so it was kind of, you know, we'd been in business for 30 years, but anyway, we really saw this opportunity to really expand because of the other partner's footprint that they already had across the country. And so we thought that would certainly be beneficial for our internal employees and provide more opportunity. And then, you know, certainly that growth level for some of them to move up into more management level roles and things like that. So, you know, it was not without, you know, a ton of consideration and thought, but it felt like the right time and the right group and the right synergies. And so we made it happen.
That's great. You know, I mean, I love the fact that you were so thoughtful about it and you considered your long-term employees and you looked at the culture of the other organization, because so many folks, you know, frankly, see the dollars, say, hey, you know, I can cash out and I'm in good shape. And, you know, the folks that have stuck by me that have been loyal to me for all these years, I hope they do okay. But you guys, certainly, it sounded like you made that concerted effort to take care of your folks. So well done. So now that you're this man of leisure, what are you doing, Mark?
You know, I've traded in the collar shirts for my hoodies.
There
now.
You go.
So I'm around. I'm an avid golfer. Yeah. As you know, Kevin, and also my son, who is my middle child, my son is a senior in high school. And so he'll be going to college here in 4 months, I guess. And so, and he's taken up, kind of taken a liking to golf along with me. So really, you know, my first pivot and focus since, you know, I'd say since the last couple of months has been, I think I'm going to relax. And I'm going to spend these next 4 months really spending time with him and my other two daughters and, you know, getting to play some golf with him, visiting my daughter down at Texas A&M where she goes to school. And then my youngest daughter, she's in high school here. It's just a couple more years. So, you know, when you're growing a business and it's busy and you have to travel a lot, as a lot of, I'm sure your guests do or have done, you know, you can get caught up in it and you don't, and you never want to look back and be like, you know, I missed some things. I missed that, or I should have done X, yeah. I should have done Y. And so, that's what I'm going to do. You know, at least through the summer, right. It's just, and they're going to get sick of me probably, but
that's okay. We'll see. So any thoughts as far as, you know, once you work through kind of this time of your life, which I think is great. Spend the time with the family. Any thoughts about maybe the next venture?
I've tried not to get too involved with those thoughts yet. it was such a phenomenon because I graduated Baylor on a Saturday, right, in 95 or 6, and went started to work on that Monday down in Austin, Texas, and have never not worked or, you know, been employed or had a job through 30 years. And so it's a habit, right, of just doing things. And so to wake up and all of a sudden not have responsibility to do this thing and your phone dinging and you know, hey, at some point they actually cut my email off. So I couldn't even go to my email and check it. And that was like a forced, you know, adventure from it. So, but I found, right, just this overwhelming sense of gratitude for what we had done, but also this new relief of, wow, you know, you kind of start to look at the world around you differently, and kind of cool and certainly interesting. So I've had, you know, I've had a few conversations with colleagues around the industry about, hey, you know, what are opportunities out there? But I'll probably turn my focus to that later this summer, and just kind of see what's going on. There's a lot of action right now in the industry with all the new technology and a lot of things happening. So we'll see.
That's great. Yeah. You know, I think whenever I left the hospital last year, the word that described it was peace. You know, you really, like you said, you know, we're those type A folks that are always charging, always going ahead. And you don't necessarily think about the amount of stress that you're under until you're not. And then, and so, you know, literally whenever I left, I felt a weight lift off of my chest. And I think the funniest comment came from my wife. She was visiting our kids in North Carolina. And so the next morning I hopped a plane over there and joined them. And when they picked me up at the airport, my wife looked at me and she said, "Your hair is already darker." And so, you know, but you're right. You don't think about that when you're in the midst of everything. And I had an opportunity yesterday to go back to my hospital and see a lot of my team, a lot of my colleagues, and all of them were like, "You look great." I said, "Well, I should." I said, "I don't have any stress." Yeah. You know, and I do what I want. I'm getting plenty of sleep now, you know. So,
yeah. Right? Yep. Sleep's underrated.
And, you know, like you, I love golf. And so I've been playing a little bit more golf. And, you know, it's crazy, right? The more you play, the better you seem to play. I didn't know that.
What they say. Yeah.
But anyway, hey, Mark. It's been a ton of fun having you on. It's always good to talk to you, my friend. Any final words you want to share with my audience?
Kind of on the topic that we were just hitting on, you know, if people do have that opportunity in their life, whether it's part of whether they're transitioning out of a role, whether it's their choice or not, right? But they have this gap, and you know, I think we often get hyper focused on, I got to find the next thing. You know, I would just encourage, this is just from this experience, encourage them to at least just kind of take maybe 3 or 4 weeks after that and just try to find that peace, because you see things differently. You even kind of see the people in the industry and the industry itself a little differently, and it, you know, might change your perspective and be able to go and then find a much better opportunity. But I think just to take that deep breath, you know, would be important. So
very good, man. That's a great word. So Mark, again, thanks, buddy, for joining me on today's episode of I Don't Care. And absolutely. And to my audience, and thank you for joining us today on I Don't Care with me, Dr. Kevin Stevenson. Never take it for granted that you have other things you can do, but you chose to spend some time with us, and we appreciate that. And so we will see you next time. Take care.